You're locked on to Hans Olsen and Scotty Chich.
That's right.
Yeah.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. It is time to check in with the great Craig Buller Jack as we... I don't know, Buller, you don't have to say this, but we're mercifully coming to the end of the season for the Jazz. Hey,
No, you're not far off there, my friend.
Yeah. Before we get to the Jazz, I want to take you back to June of 94. What was it like in a newsroom on us, you know, on the sports desk when OJ is getting chased through LA in a white Bronco? What was it like from your perspective when all that stuff hit the fan and then the trial and everything else that came along with it?
Yeah, I remember it well, the whole thing. I think everyone, you know, in time, there are stories that you go back and say, where were you? Like when Tyson took a chunk out of Evander Holyfield's ears, you know, ear as well. But that OJ ride with Al Cowens through the streets of Los Angeles in the white Bronco was just surreal. You know, there was so much evidence pointing to OJ, and then his run through the highways of Los Angeles and the slow pursuit by police. It was like, are you kidding? Not just one car, but it was like in a movie, you know, like, you know, when it's like, when they're going to yell cut, you know, and everybody gets out and, you know, shakes hands and okay, that was a good take. But no, it was real. It was happening right in front of us. One of the most gruesome double homicides of all time. And then the trial that, you know, really caught the imagination of the entire world. And in the moment when the glove don't fit, you must acquit. I mean, those words still echo from Johnny Cochran. And I just thought Al Cowens knew more than maybe we ever found out from him. We were talking about it this morning at shoot around. I don't recall if he ever went to the stand during the trial. And I thought that would probably, since he was right there, what he maybe had discussed with OJ would have been asked in a court of law. But no, it never was. But it was a surreal time. And I remember just all eyes on the television like, this really is happening. And it's really, and why it was one of the most prominent, successful sports figures of that era. Because not only did he was a great football player, and I believe the first to rush for 1,000, he also then transitioned into acting and obviously Monday Night Football. So everybody had OJ and their, you know, in their living room. And for this to come about, it's still just it's a time that makes my head swim a little bit. But, 76 years old, and I guess it went with him, the truth, unless, you know, he wrote some papers. I think some people felt like he admitted it in his book. I read some of that. It's quite intriguing. But, you know, whether or not there'll be a paper that pops up someday sooner than later that he actually wrote, yes, I did, no, I didn't. It'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of days.
So I do remember the baby Jessica incident. I do remember Princess Diana, but I don't really remember the...
Oh, really?
No, I don't really remember the courtroom drama. So.
Oh, dude, I lived in... You imagine how crazy that'd be if that was going on right now with Twitter and social media and stuff?
Scotty, Hans, that would have blown up Twitter, which is now X, and everyone would have had everyone would have become a professional, they would think they were a legitimate lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They were playing the case, and there'd be so much out there online that your head would spin. And Hans, in 94, you know, there was nothing like that. That's why there was so much intrigue tuning in to anything OJ. And there were constant news breaks and constant cut-ins. And, I mean, it captured everyone's imagination, not only in this country, but around the world. It was the story of stories.
When the verdict came back innocent, what was the general reaction? What was your thought? But what was the nation's general reaction?
Shock. Like, I can't believe this.
Yeah.
We all thought he was, everybody thought he was guilty.
Yes. I mean, the evidence was overwhelming. And gosh, Scotty, I mean, I remember, you know, the lawyers he had was, I mean, stacked to the rafters. Didn't F. Lee Bailey jump in at one point in time as well with Cochran? And the Kardashians, their father was part of that group, the yeah. Dream Team, I think they were labeled, to come in to defend O.J. But I think the most iconic moment, and I tell you what, real quick, I have to go back just strangely on the road last week. I'm watching Comedy Channel or something, and the Seinfeld episode jumps in with at that time, it was about the same time Seinfeld and O.J., this all happened, and they had Kramer being sued or something, but the lawyer they had was an offshoot of Johnny Cochran's character on that show. And that's when I think they had a character, a woman who was walking down the street braless, and she put the bra on. And do you remember this scene in the courtroom?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If the bra don't fit, you must acquit. And everybody yeah. in the audience just erupts in laughter. But that's exactly what it was. Everyone was so focused on that comment. And that really was the defining moment, I think, for the jury. And but what's strange, Scotty, you remember O.J. wore gloves over the or he put the gloves over blue surgical gloves, so they didn't want to contaminate the evidence. And so it was like, how could those gloves fit anyway when he had another pair of surgical gloves on underneath? It was just the most bizarre case, and everyone had their own opinion. But how could O.J., who was really the darling of the National Football League and what, the Naked Guns movie series? I mean, those were hilarious comedy. And then he became a football analyst. And it was just, it was a surreal time. It really was.
All right. Well, we've tap danced enough, Bowler. Let's get to it.
Three to go.
It's the three to go. No stars in the lineup tonight. Youth movement continues on. I want you to evaluate a little bit. Evaluate's not the right word. And I tried to ask this question to David the other day, too. And I'm not exactly sure the right word to use here, because I don't think that we should be evaluating whether it's a good job or a bad job that Will Hardy is trying to do, because they're throwing him in a really difficult, unique situation here. Sure. But how do you think he's handled this? Because there's a lot of learning opportunities for these young guys. He benches some guys the other day to send a message. He's working through a lot of things. It's not about wins and losses. It's about development. Kind of give me your assessment on how Will Hardy's handled himself in a situation that's not necessarily conducive to picking up wins.
Well, I think he's been put in a tough situation. I'm not sure if he knew when he signed the deal what really the test would be. But I think he's passed the test personally. Maybe I'm too close. I talked to him. Tonight will be for the 79th time in our pregame hit. I think he's been very upfront and truthful with the players in his evaluation of each and every one of these guys that have come and gone. Look, he's a good coach, and I think Justin Zanuck has echoed that may be too good at times, because they have succeeded and won more games than they expected during this retooling, rebuilding, whatever you want to describe it. I think he's still focused. He still pushes. I think the players, despite the losing streak and what happened after they traded Olynyk and Ochai and Fontecchio, it kind of gutted the emotions of the locker room, because Olynyk was a big part of that. And Ochai was a fun guy to be around, and so was Simone. So I think probably what happened, everyone then got the message what the franchise would be doing, and it was hard. But I think he's done a good job of still getting a lot out of players, and many are auditioning, I think is a good word. Many are still being, quote, evaluated by Danny and Justin and the rest of the staff on who fits and who doesn't, what pieces stay, what pieces move, which piece has the ability to bring in another potential player that will fit the puzzle. So it's not easy for the players. I mean, I've been around this locker room a lot on the road, and we'll be back on the road after tonight's game for the final two against the Clippers and the Warriors. But I thought they've handled it as well as they can. And the one thing Will does do, to answer your question and coming around full circle, I think he's, this may be the important thing, maybe you learned this from Popovich too, is that he's been up front. There's been no secrets behind the, you know, the glass, the door, of what their roles are and what he expects from them. And from what I gather from players I've talked to is that they only want to be told the truth. And I really believe that's what Will has done to keep this team in a competitive mode. I think there's been a – I got to give a high five to the Jazz fans who have still packed the arena to come and watch the young guys develop in Keontae and Sensabaugh and Hendricks and others. And tonight, you know, is a fan appreciation night, 41 games at Delta Center. And I hope fans come out and applaud, you know, themselves, because a lot of fans in any sport, and Hans, you know this, professionally, amateur, they come and go. Mm-hmm. But I have to applaud Jazz Nation for hanging in there. Now, next year, you know, we'll see and what happens in the offseason. But I do applaud what the Jazz fan base has done to support this team.
You know, we talk about next year, Bullard, and what I'm trying to do is ready Jazz fans to hunker down for a bit and enjoy what you got and enjoy the show and the food and the environment, the arena, and the show that's put on. But I think that there's a hunker down moment here, because the way I look at it, I think Golden State, Los Angeles Lakers, the Phoenix Suns, and the L.A. Clippers are about 3 years from aging out of their superstars with, you know, LeBron James and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Kawhi Leonard, you know, with 3 or 4 years, Paul George, you know, just the crews that they have. I just look at a couple of real contenders, Oklahoma City and Denver. And the way I look at it for the Utah Jazz, Bowler, is whether I got to sit through another year or I got to sit through two more years, at some point, this stockpile that you got, when that right moment hits and Danny Ainge sees it and he says, that's it. I just want the Jazz to have every asset ready to make the trade and be able to get and be able to bring in the team that makes the run at the young Oklahoma City Thunders or the reigning champions of the Denver Nuggets, or maybe Minnesota stays together for a period of time and Towns gets healthy and stays healthy. But that's the way I look at it. But I don't mind hunkering down. But when it's time to pounce, they better pounce big, and there better be some type of gigantic payoff. But I believe that's coming, don't you?
Yeah. You know, I think it will. I think it's sooner than later. And Hans, you make a great point. Look, I think Danny obviously knows, fans know, this is a smart fan base. They can look at the standings and see who's high on top with Denver, Minnesota, and OKC. They're all in three different levels of development. OKC is the youngest, and they went through their tough times on the rebuild, but now they've gained the momentum. Minnesota has a plethora of vets who are kind of making a, I don't say last stand, but they're making a push with Gobert, you know, Cat and Conley and others. And then, of course, Denver is just solid. They do it their way with Jamal and Jokic and Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. That's a solid, solid base. But you make a great point. The other piece of this is that there's several teams. I think this is their calling card this year. If they don't make a run to the title or get into the finals in the West, I think you'll see the Warriors and the Clippers and even the Suns make some drastic moves. And so what that means is you dismantle some players or move some players, and the Jazz are sitting there with picks that could easily be a part of the equation. I think everyone in the West and in the East, they know Danny. They know he's a player in the sense of making deals, which he's already done with Donovan and Rudy. And Hans, I think some other teams are impatient, and they've already made that run. And they've tried to push it one more year. You know, the window, they always say, of opportunity starts to close. And you know what? Golden State's in that position right now. Do they try to get something for Steph Curry or Klay Thompson right now before the window closes and then the value is totally depleted? So I think that's another part of the equation that Danny is well aware of in his rebuild of the Boston Celtics. And what he wants to do, and Justin, they've said it before, they want a wider window to give Jazz fans a wider window of opportunity to finally reach the pinnacle, and that's an NBA title. Not 2 and 3 year windows, but 6 to 8 year windows. And, you know, I think you're right, Hans. You got to hit at the right time, and you also have to hit on draft picks like the Jazz did in 84 and 85 with Stockton and Malone, and even Big T in 83 was part of that original foundation, right? And so now here you are so many years later in the same position. And so Danny has got to use every piece of his expertise, player, general manager, of his past experiences and bring it to the forefront. You know, roll the dice and hit. Find that right guy to build around. You know, market and use your money wisely. And I think Ryan Smith totally trusts what Danny Ainge is going to do and how he's proceeding. It's not easy for fans, but, you know, if they see the plan or understand the plan, I think, hands to your point, makes it a little bit easier to accept. And next year will be another growth year with some new pieces. Then after that, I think you'll see the Jazz make a spike. And even may be surprised. We may even be surprised this summer, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's interesting because it would be very, I don't know if Justin Zanuck or Danny Ainge heard me say this, they'd reach through the microphone and strangle me. But with the assets, with the assets that they have available and the resources that they have available, I think it would be very relatively easy for the Jazz to improve to a 48-53 win team very quickly. I think they could get there very quickly with the assets. It's like, you know, you had three boys, you know, I've got three kids, and, you know, when they're at that age of like 8 to, you know, 15, 16 years old, they get a little money in their pocket from Christmas or birthdays, and they immediately want to go and spend it. And so the Jazz have this wealth of resources available to them, and they could go out and spend it and get a 48-53 win team really easily, in my opinion. But the problem is, it would stay there at a 48-53 win team. And right. So you'd be exactly. Like, okay, you know, look, we're a playoff team. We're anywhere from a, you know, a 4-6 seed, and we're winning games and we've got some excitement, but it's not going to go any further than that. So you can, right. You can take that next step and make the fan base, you know, a little bit more happier, but just know that's where you're going to be capped out. Or you can just wait a little longer. And I always tell my kids this a little bit, like, delayed gratification. Just hang in there, hang in there. Don't take grandma's $20 bill and just spend it yet. Wait. Let's wait until there's something you really, really want. And then when you really want it, then you can go all in. And then instead of being a 48-53 win team, you could be a 58-61 win team and be on the verge of, you know, getting into the Western Conference Finals or the NBA Finals. But you just got to wait for that right opportunity and not spend that birthday money so quickly.
And Scotty just won Father of the Year. No, your analogy's spot on. I mean, you know what? If you got 20, can you use a fiver right now? Sure. You know what? What are you going to do? A draft pick? You may be going to, you know, pick up a free agent just to kind of, again, a young player who maybe has been discarded because there's not enough room for him, and play it smart. And then, you know what? You got the $15 in your pocket, and then later you're going to spend big. Scotty, that's the best way to put it. I mean, honestly. But it's, do you have the patience and the ability to say, I'm going to hold back. I'm not going to play my cards. I'm not going to play my full hand right now. I'm not going to spend the full 20. And I think that's really the way it is. You got a bucket full of first round picks. You have close to 30 or more million dollars in cap space. You have some young pieces right now that you still want to know if they're going to fit for the long term, or do you move them as another asset? And so all these things are in the mind of Danny Ainge, who ultimately with Ryan and Justin make these tough decisions. With, though, I know Ryan wants to win sooner than later. And you know, how do you do that but not overstep the plan? And so, you know, it's like what they did. They brought in Olenek, and they brought, you know, Fontecchio develops and becomes a three-point shooter. And, you know, KO is a fan favorite, you know. T calling the clinic, Olenek. I mean, how could you not like this guy? I mean, he's been around the league, but the Jazz were better than I think Danny expected them. And then again, you have to say why. Well, maybe the coaching schemes are right, and everyone bought in. Communication's good. So you've got a foundation piece with Will, and maybe you've got, you know, a Steele and Sensabaugh at 28 who's going to develop. Maybe Taylor Hendricks at number 9, you know, is just a young guy at 20 who is now just beginning to believe in himself and get stronger both mentally and physically. And then Taylor, you know, Taylor takes it from there. And then Keontae, you know, it's hard. That point guard position is the most difficult. Whoever runs your show is usually an all-star and is always in the talks of being one of the most, you know, what, dominant players in the league besides a big man. but he has to be fundamentally sound and mentally tough. And I think it's tough when you're 20 to learn the mental side of it. You see some athleticism, but how are you going to develop on the mental side? Because that's where you separate good from great. And Hans, you've been around professional players that you say, God, they get all the qualities in the world athletically, but the separator, right, is the mental side. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Danny Ainge knows very well. He was a tough guy himself in college and in the pros, and then as a general manager. So I think he's looking for a combination of both of those. And those are hard to find, especially now. Then how do you evaluate it now at 19 and 20? I think it'd be tough. I mean, it's almost impossible when I look back at my life, what I was doing at 19 and 20, and am I going to be able to handle the rigors and the pressures and the practices and the demands every day as a pro? You know, the money's good, but do I still have enough discipline to actually achieve that? And I think that's the biggest test for GMs today. You know, Bailey, Big T, you know, he was a four-year guy. He was more NBA ready. These guys are one and done. And I think that's probably the most difficult part of it, is that you can't look into a crystal ball and predict the future and how these guys are going to respond as they grow and mature. And, man, you've got to have some great insight. And that's where the Jazz are right now. They got to make the right decisions at the right time to open that window to 8 to 9 years instead of a 3 or 4 year window. And that's the biggest challenge.
Hey, Baller, before we let you go, how much NHL have you called in your life? Have you called some hockey?
About 60 scores. There you go. Then the horn sounds, you know. There you go. That's all. I got soccer in my wheelhouse, but hockey, I am absolutely in awe of hockey play-by-play announcers because the puck to follow that, and then the names that go with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Russian, Slavic, you name it. I mean, there's no Joneses that I know playing hockey right now. So, you know, it could happen. It's being pushed hard.
Yeah.
The NHL is actually beginning to make some noise about it as well, involving the Phoenix Coyotes. And so, man, if this city, this Western region gets baseball, hockey, and already the NBA, it'll be quite intriguing because Vegas is on that same path, right? So rivalries and, you know, just far enough apart to kind of build a little Western momentum in the world of professional sports, both in hockey and baseball. We'll see if it all comes to fruition. You know, what's the old adage? They say, build it and they will come.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Ryan's the centerpiece of that. If this new arena or this complex that they're thinking about or trying to manufacture downtown, it's exciting, but it takes time to build, and obviously billions of dollars. And, you know, how do you jump over that hurdle? I mean, wow. But Ryan has – hey, Ryan's a goer, you know, and he has dreams, and he wants to build and bring in hockey and make that a part of the sports entertainment group. And my goodness, think about the downtown growth if that's where they end up, you know, being. But there's a long ways to go, obviously, and then the commitment has to be made. But it's exciting, especially even with the Olympics in the air as well. Salt Lake, when I got here, man, has it grown. And the Olympics were really the first stepping stone in 2002, and look where it's gone from there.
Well, Bowler, we appreciate it. Finish strong. The end is in sight. And then we can talk.
I like that, man. I will. I'll just strap it and go, and three to go. We jump on a flight tonight. Clippers tomorrow. And here's the biggest issue. No one knows who's going to play. But I'm just glad there's still competitive matchups in the West and a little bit in the East. I mean, we know Boston's the top tier. But at least in the West, you know, there are, you know, the battle for one and the battle for the middle. And even at the lower half is pretty much done. You know the top 10 teams, but they're still trying to jockey for 8, 9 or home court 4, 5, yep. Clippers and Mavericks. I think for the fans, I think the play-in has been a great addition because, you know, those last 2 weeks of the season, a lot of teams just 1, 2, 3 Cancun, right? That's always been the fun, you know, combo. But I'm just glad there's still competition that's going to be out there. And the Clippers will probably play because they want home court, and Dallas wants home court. So that's the beauty right now of the competition of how close it is. Who we get tomorrow night and who we get to see on Sunday at Golden State, who knows. But we'll be ready to go.
Thank you, Bowler. Appreciate it. You're the best, and we'll talk again here real soon.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. Talk soon.
There he is, Craig Bowlerjack, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Take a break. Come back. Good, the bad, the ugly. Coming up next, then at 2:05, Jalen Gambandora will join us again. We'll get an update on the NHL front. It's all straight ahead, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Your home for Real Salt Lake is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Real Salt Lake is back in action Saturday night at home against the Columbus Crew, the defending MLS Cup champs. Pregame at 6:30, first kick at 7:30, right here on The Zone.
Catch every moment of every RSL match right here on your exclusive home of Real Salt Lake. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Hanson Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. It is your good, your bad, the ugly, all brought to you by RGS Exteriors and Construction. Obsessed with quality results. We were at RGS yesterday. Tim and the crew ready to help you out with whatever you may need.
Love those guys.
Yep.
Well, Scotty, I don't hate seeing it. The Beef Hammer is leading the field. He is one of one right now at 5 under through 15 holes. Bryson DeChambeau, the controversial
figure. Does somebody have him?
No. No, nobody took him.
Nobody took the Beef Hammer?
No, he's been terrible.
That's why
nobody's taken him.
That's why it's kind of incredible to see what he's currently doing. I do think it'll fall apart. And Bryson is known for falling apart. He loves to get inside his own head, and he just turns upside down, round around. But I don't mind seeing him out front. I think that he is at least a talking point. John Rahm, last year's champion, is currently T5 at 2 under. Cam Smith is T5 at 2 under, so John Rahm and Cam Smith.
So you've gone through all your golfers, so there you go. Okay, good.
Okay, fine. Viktor Hovland is at 2 under as well. I mean, if we need to start pointing out everybody's golfers.
Might as well, but my guy Xander is like 3-2 over, I think.
Well, Will Zalatoris is 1 under. So was it you or Scotty that took Will? Yeah, you did.
He actually was just 2 under, but he must have dropped a shot.
He did. He just bogeyed and dropped a shot, but... Right now, Scotty's Scheffler, Spieth, and Rory are all kind of later tee times.
I'm glad you told me because I've already forgotten who
actually,
I selected.
Actually, Scheffler is at 2 under.
All right.
So Scheffler is doing extremely
Attaboy.
Well.
Attaboy. Let's go.
And Tiger Woods is going to be coming off the box in about 15 minutes.
Hey, can I show you a picture that's making the rounds in the, what do you call the cabin where the bigwigs go afterwards?
Butler's cabin.
Butler's cabin. Butler's so cabin. There's a picture of the broadcasters. You got Scott Van Pelt and Jim Nance and then Jelly Roll. Have you seen that picture that Scott Van Pelt tweeted out? It's awesome. Van Pelt's in a suit, Jim Nance looking like Jim Nance, and here's Jelly Roll right in the middle of him with a big old cheesy grin on his face. You know, like, I know the guy, but I don't know if I know the music. Like, is he good?
No. His music is terrible.
I can't remember what he does.
He pulled at people's heartstrings. His story is pretty incredible.
Well, I mean, I will say this. He's one of our people.
Yeah, there's no question. He was funny in the commercial where people forgot something. And he looked in the mirror. He's like, somebody tattooed my face. I can't stand his music, but some people like him.
Is he like what kind of music is it?
It's like a country pop hit.
Right?
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's a country pop crossover.
And I know a lot of that country pop.
Like he sings about like things like, you know, depression and then getting out of depression, those types of things.
Hans and Scotty, there's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
Well, the twists and turns on the Shohei Ohtani translator continues on. Was gambling millions of dollars. And the feds, in their investigation, have now concluded not only was Ohtani not involved, that he was actually a victim of the fraud as well, as they have ciphered through now a grand total of 19,000 wagers replaced by his interpreter from 2021 through January of 2024. The average wager was $12,800. His biggest bet reached $160,000. They believe that he has lost a grand total of over $40 million. That's, you know what?
Baseball needed him to be cleared of this, and they made sure
good.
He was cleared.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, Lloyd. Nope, not my Dodgers.
Had he signed with the Giants, you'd be like,
I'm just saying.
He's such a victim in this whole thing.
No,
not my Dodgers.
Just saying, he's not. Baseball needed him to be cleared because he is baseball right now, and they made sure he was cleared. He's done.
All I know is when the FBI sat down in front of him, I could hear them saying, Shohei the money.
Oh, Lloyd's going right to that.
Shohei the money.
Don't do that again.
I didn't mind it.
Shohei the money.
And you would have loved it had he signed with the Giants.
No, I wouldn't have.
Yeah, you would have.
No, I'd be like, man, this guy needs to be. I mean, if you're not letting Pete Rose back in, then.
Have you not seen Shohei Ohtani's smile? It says, I am free and innocent of all guilt.
Yeah, it says.
When that man smiles.
I didn't get caught.
It's the same.
And I'm very fortunate.
It's the same smile Barry Bonds has anytime anybody brings up steroids. He's like, yeah, I did it, and you can't prove it, and I'm just loving life.
When Shohei with all my smiles, records. An angel gets their wings. His smile is beautiful, and it envelops anybody who's looking at it.
Shohei, he smiles as if he owes somebody money.
No, he doesn't. Shohei will always be innocent.
Oh, boy. All right.
That's a lot of money, though, Scotty.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of bets. Oh, my gosh. But they're saying the investigation's over. It's done.
Yep.
And he had no idea what was happening, that $40 million is gone. No yep. idea. Nope.
Like the clear and the cream just went right through his system. No big deal. All right, let's get to the ugly.
And, of course, the ugly.
Good, the bad, the ugly here on 97.5 VKSL Sports Zone. Former Kansas University men's basketball star Ben McLemore arrested this week. Booked on the charges, hands of first-degree rape. Accused of committing that crime back in October of 2021. Cops say a woman told them McLemore, who was a Portland Trailblazer at the time, assaulted her while at a home in Lake Oswego. Played in the NBA from 2013 to 2021. Following that, Jayhawk career was taken into custody on Tuesday on an outstanding warrant.
Is it just me, or has there been this crazy rash of pretty terrible crimes from athletes and former athletes?
Yeah.
Lately. Is it just me? Because
no.
I saw the Terrell Suggs.
Yes.
Story that
yeah,
you
I was
put
gonna,
up there.
I was going to get up there. We didn't have a chance to get to that yesterday, but that was a crazy story too.
Brandished a pistol.
Yeah,
and threatened
a Starbucks
worker.
In a Starbucks line, waiting for his drink, and he was the one who actually backed into the guy. So he's at fault in everything, and a guy calls him out on it. So then all of a sudden he pulls out a gun and starts.
It's unbelievable.
Yelling at a guy, "I'm going to kill you."
We just saw charges today dropped on. No, sorry. A warrant for the rest of Rashee Rice.
Yes.
Is that where we're at right
yep.
now?
Yep.
So they are going to officially arrest and charge Rashee Rice with his driving an accident and leaving the scene of a crime while there's injured people. It just feels like this has been one of the craziest and worst 3 or 4 months of
yeah.
players behaving badly that I've seen.
Yeah. I know. It's not pretty. Hands and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Coming up at a little bit later on, we'll get back to the NHL talk. The storm clouds are brewing, folks. The NHL on its way to Salt Lake City. It doesn't feel like it's a matter of if, it's just a matter of when at this point. We'll continue to break it down. Also, whole world news coming up next. It's all right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
He is a columnist for ArizonaSports.com. He's also the co-host of a midday show on 98.7 FM in Phoenix. Dan Bickley, where's the community at on this? I mean, are they fighting to keep the Coyotes?
There's a small group of very, very loyal hockey fans who have stuck with this hockey franchise throughout a couple of decades of this. But you have to understand, this relocation game has been a part of this hockey team for almost two decades now, and people are tired of it. I think most casual sports fans in Arizona just want resolution. You would have to have lived this on a year-to-year basis to understand how exhausting all of this has been to the common fan. And while I think there was a point in time in our history as a sports market that being a big league sports town, having all four major professional sports was something of value, I don't know if that's any longer the case.
Hear Jake Scott and Ben Anderson every day from 10 to noon on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Go!
It's time to span the globe for the hard-hitting news you care about. Well, not really. But hey, at least we found it interesting. This is Whole World News on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
We've got the whole world in our hands.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Let's give away some tickets, shall we? Because Lloyd's in a giving mood today. What are you feeling, Lloyd? Some RSL tickets?
Yeah, absolutely.
Call number 12, 801-575-ZONE. You'll win a pair of tickets. See Real Salt Lake take on the Columbus Crew coming up on April 13th at America First Field.
Well, Scotty, I know we've been talking about O.J. Simpson passing, but there is a more important passing to talk about. It's a man named Jisaburo Sanobe. He just passed away in Japan. Why is that significant?
Yeah, please tell.
He was the oldest living man in the world at 112 years old. So the new record is handed over to a man in England. He's an Englishman. His name is John Alfred Tenniswood. He is 111 years old. Couple things here. Number one, he was born just a couple of months after the Titanic sank.
Wow. All right.
He was born August 26th, 1912.
Did you say he was on the Titanic?
Born a couple of months after it sank.
Oh.
Think about that, though. He was born August 26th, 1912. So he's lived through two world wars.
Yep.
He actually served as the British Army Pay Corps in World War II. So he actually served his country in World War II. And he was an accountant. And he gave a couple of words of advice. You interested in some advice from a 111-year-old man?
I hope he's one of those dudes that like eats a Big Mac every day.
You're not far off. They said, how did you do it? He said, well, if you drink too much, or you eat too much, or you walk too much, if you do too much of anything, you're going to suffer eventually. It's pure luck what's happened to me.
I like it, yeah.
You either live long or you live short, and you can't do much about it. He went on and he said that the one thing that he does not skip is once a week he eats his fish and chips, which is a deep fried.
Oh, yeah.
That's basically a French fry and a skipper's fish log.
Yes. Although, you know, I will say when I went to when my wife and I did our anniversary trip to Europe, and so I'm in London and I'm like, you know, we need fish and chips, right? That's what you do when you're in London.
Oh,
you
get
fish and chips.
Yes.
I'm used to American fish and chips. Yeah. You know, you get like a nice,
which are amazing,
a nice piece of cod, deboned, everything, you know, and it's deep fried beautifully,
oh, yeah,
and the chips are crunchy. Fish and chips over there, they actually took like an actual fish, obviously both are real fish, but like they didn't debone it. The head was still on it. They just battered up a whole fish, threw it in the oil. The chips were just big, thick, and soggy. And I was like, and everybody's like, and I went on Yelp and like was like, this is one of the more highly reviewed fish and chip places. But I'm like, ew, this is gross.
And what they serve the ship with, mayonnaise, don't they?
Yeah. Yep. And oil and vinegar too.
What?
Miracle Whip would be better.
And they liked that over there?
They loved it, man. At least that's what they were saying.
Did you go to a reputable place, or do you feel like you got
too? No, I mean, like I said, I went on all the online reviews and all that, and everybody was like, oh, yeah, this is the best.
Got to go try the fish and chips.
Yeah. And I was like,
ugh. And so you're sifting through bones and.
Yeah, I was not a fan. Not a fan. But then again, you know, maybe I'm just an uncultured, ugly American.
Did Mama try some? Did she like it?
Yeah, Mama didn't like it either.
Really?
Yeah.
So the actual fish and chips in England suck.
In my humble American opinion,
why
yes.
does that have to make us an ugly American if we don't like something that they make?
I it's
like, come on.
It's such blowback. Okay, then let's do this. Give me 5 minutes and let's go belly up to a Skipper's bar and have the all-you-can-eat fish and chips. I promise, the Skipper's fish and chips. Now that's real.
You
Skipper's.
You ugly American.
That's real
I'm
English
with you, man.
Fare.
There we go. That's what we need to be doing.
I used to love Skipper's back in the day. The clam chowder was so good, man.
Did you ever have their sushi there?
At Skipper's?
They don't Skipper's had sushi?
No, they don't. No, they do not.
That would have been awesome.
Oh, man, I loved a good Skipper's fish and chips. But 111 years old, and I was watching a video of him. He looks pretty spry.
Ah, boy, good for him. So it looks like he's got a few more years left in him?
Yes. Our 122-year-old, she passed away. Oldest living
woman. Was that the Russian that was hoping to die?
Yep.
Oh, she finally did it, huh?
She said, every day of my life has been miserable, and God is punishing me, and that's why I'm 102.
For making me
22.
Live.
Oldest living woman, which is now the oldest living person, is 117. Maria Brinas Marrera.
That doesn't even sound fun.
And she lives
in
Spain.
Not even 111 sounds fun. That doesn't sound fun.
I don't know. Maybe she loves Spain. Maybe Spain's the real deal. I don't know. Maybe she... like sticking around.
So Jessica's grandma, she's 102. She's 102.
That's impressive.
It is impressive.
But that's 15 years younger.
That's 15 years
Maria.
Younger. And I don't know how much fun she's having right now.
Yeah. Yep. No, probably not. Probably not at all. All right. Anz and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. At 2 o'clock hour, we'll kick it off next.